Welcome to the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast, a fantasy basketball podcast with a dynasty focus. Welcome all fantasy fiends to the first double-digit episode of the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast. We've hit the 10-episode mark on this new TFU pod. It's been a blast, and I'm looking forward to more to come. Unfortunately, we're missing Tony today. He's traveling, seeing this beautiful country of ours, I guess, maybe for work or for family, I'm not sure. But so if you enjoy tuning in to hear the smooth tones of Mr. Papadopoulos' voice, I'm sorry, but you're stuck with me today. But luckily, we do have a replacement. We subbed in our fearless leader, Kevin, to replace Tony today. What's going on, Kevin? How have you been enjoying this NBA season so far?
I'm doing great, Jay, and I'm loving the season so far. And I'm ready to go. I'm ready to call out some fantasy takes like Spoelstra calls out the refs. And I'm ready to go.
All right. Yeah, I guess I'm just thankful to have basketball back. You know, the season starts next week, too. So I'm pretty stoked for that as well. I'm looking forward to seeing how Memphis's powerhouse plays under Penny Hardaway. And I'll finally begin to solidify my top 30 prospect rankings, which I have a loose draft of at the moment, but it'll be good to see them out on the court. But anyhow, before we get into the recent NBA news, we have some recent news of our own at the Fantasy Unicorns Factory. First, I think we forgot to mention this this last week, but we have a new unicorn in tow. His name is Rohan. He'll be providing some great content, great articles that we're looking forward to. In fact, he already has one published on ADP Over-Under, so go check that out for sure. And in addition to Rohan's piece, we have several other new items to check out on the site. One of the OG unicorns, Jesse, our DFS master, has returned and will be posting DFS articles regularly. They might not be daily because he typically has a lot going on, but he gets as many done as he can, so just be on the lookout for those if you're a daily fantasy player. In addition to those great reads, Jeff is our weekly waiver wire wisdom guy. You know, he just put out the first one, and it's great stuff. And to go along with our weekly waiver pieces, we also have weekly streaming articles on the site. The first one of those just went up as well. Rhett does a good job with those. So we have and will have each week a plethora of content to digest as we're progressing down the path of being a one-stop shop for all your fantasy basketball needs. But you have anything to add, Kevin, before we get into some recent news here?
No. You know, I think we have a lot of great new additions to the team, and I'm definitely looking forward to all the stuff that we're putting out. I know you are hard at work on the prospects, and, you know, we've been updating our dynasty rankings and other rankings, and you know, I think I'm going to start getting more into some dynasty stuff soon. Probably get into my deep league detectives series as well for those guys that are in the 20 and 30 team leagues. So it's definitely a different group of players you're looking at in those types of leagues. So I'll try to dive into that, and you know, we're going to also be doing some roundtables with all of the writers. You know, we definitely have a good group. And we want to make sure that you guys are getting exposed to everybody. Jay listed everybody that has put out some stuff recently. We also have Kyle as well. And, you know, he's putting out some interesting takes as well. And I just wanted to kind of do a quick plug of, you know, I know some of you guys out there probably hit up Jay with a lot of questions, which is great. He's, you know, definitely knows his stuff. And if you want to have access to all of the unicorns and have kind of a priority for all of your questions, any advice you're looking for, that sort of stuff, we do have a very, very inexpensive Patreon that we encourage everyone to consider joining if you enjoy our stuff, if you get any value from our stuff. For as little as $1 a month, you can sign up, and you'll have access to an exclusive chat that's just for Patreon members and all of the Unicorns writing staff. And again, you'll get priority to any questions, any advice you're looking for. So something to think about. It's patreon.com/thefantasyunicorns. And I encourage you to check it out and consider joining if you're looking to get that type of advice.
Yeah, definitely a good call. Yeah, we can get into. We have a lot to get into here. So, what we up first is our recent news. So, ref, let's hear that whistle. All right. First up on the docket, we have a real unfortunate turn of events for Suns fans and anyone who drafted DeAndre Ayton, because he's facing a 25-game suspension for violating the league's substance abuse policy. Now, there wasn't exactly any traces of drugs or PEDs, if I'm understanding this correctly. What was found in the drug screen was actually diuretics, which is a substance one would use if they wanted to mask their urine and hide something they otherwise wouldn't want anyone to find, which sounds to me like he may have taken some kind of PEDs and was trying to hide it, but that's just speculation on my part, though. But it looks like Frank Kaminsky and Aaron Baines will step into larger roles, and Kaminsky will actually be receiving a little more run than Baines. That's what it's looked like so far, at least. And maybe unexpectedly, pretty good things from Kaminsky so far. And Dario Saric actually got a little more center run in a smaller ball type of role as well. But maybe the worst part about this for Ayton owners is that I don't think most platforms allow you to put a suspended player in the IR spot, which makes this a really tough situation, especially in redraft leagues. My question to you, Kevin, is are these guys worth owning in most leagues? You know, Kaminsky and Baines, are they worth an ad?
Sure, yeah. And I think the role of diuretics is to get the water out of your system. So I guess it's to flush your system out. So I guess that's
right.
That would be the masking potentially of getting that type of stuff out. The joke I saw on Twitter was that Ayton actually had 4 blocks in the first game. And then the NBA was like, hold up, we need to check this guy. Baines and Kaminsky, I think, are both acceptable ads in standard league. You know, neither are going to be amazing players. It's not like all of a sudden you have a top 50 player in either of those guys, but definitely, you know, standard league relevant. I think probably Kaminsky a little bit over Baines because he does provide points and threes, and he actually has boarded a little bit better than what I was expecting when he kind of was thrust into the starting role. But yeah, you know, they're both respectable sort of lower end centers to have on your team. But really you're just kind of waiting for Ayton to come back. And I agree, it's tough for anyone that did draft Ayton, because if your league doesn't allow you to put him in an IR spot, you're kind of just stuck with a big fat zero for the next, couple months really. And, unless they appeal it. I know there was talk of the NBA Players Association trying to get that reduced. But, you know, either way, you're just kind of out of luck. And I don't think he's somebody that you can drop, really, especially this early on. You kind of just have to ride it out and patch together what you can and hope that, you know, he can come back a little bit sooner than expected.
Yeah, Kaminsky, the 97th overall fantasy player through 3 games this season. actually, Baines is kind of right there behind him at 106 in 9 cat leagues. But to me, they're both worth owning in standard leagues. The crazy, I mean, like you alluded to, you're not going to love owning them. They probably won't really pop off the page very often. But the wild part is it might be possible that they're both worth owning after Ayton returns as well, especially Kaminsky. I don't know about shallower leagues, but, you know, at least 16-team leagues, something like that. You know, Kaminsky's been on a roll. He did really well in preseason, and he kept it going into the regular season as well. You know, through 3 games, he's averaging 15.3 points, 7.7 boards, and 3 assists with a nice 93% free throw. So, oh, and he's also averaging 0 steals and 0 blocks, so there's that too.
The Kaminsky classic.
Right, exactly. But what he's done is enough to give him, you know, that top 100 value. Like I said, he's the 97th guy in 9 cat right now, and I believe he was 89 before that third game. I wouldn't be excited about owning Kaminsky, and I feel like he's due for a dud at this point, but maybe Monty Williams is benefiting him. You know, I mean, he was a top 10 pick a few years ago, so I think he's worth owning. I wouldn't be excited about it, and I'd consider cutting bait if he has a few consecutive rough games. But for now, he's looking pretty solid. And Baines is more on the fence. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what, Kaminsky, wasn't he the guy that Jordan wanted and wouldn't?
Yep.
He turned down 4 first round picks.
Yeah, it was something nuts like that. I do remember that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but you go ahead about Baynes.
Well, I was just going to say, he's kind of more on the fence for me. He didn't get much playing time in that opening game. At least Kaminsky has the added benefit of being versatile enough to play either front court spot in spurts. Baynes is hurt by Kaminsky's ability to play some center. And as I mentioned a minute ago, Dario Saric even played some center. Baynes won't be a big minute guy every night. I think it'll be matchup dependent type of thing. That being said, he's definitely their most sound, best defensive big man. So he should always be in the conversation for minutes there, especially while Ayton's out. But I think that'll keep him right around the end of standard league radar. I think there's better options, but we can move on from some unfortunate news regarding the 2018 first overall pick to some unfortunate news regarding the 2018 second overall pick. Marvin Bagley is set to miss at least a month of time with a non-displaced fracture in his right thumb. The initial timetable was 4 to 6 weeks. This one's a little easier to digest, I guess, because unlike with Ayton, Bagley can be moved to your IR spot, allowing you to pick up another asset temporarily. I'll use this opportunity to remind you that we publish weekly waiver and streamer articles on our site to help you out in situations like this. But it's also a little easier to digest because you likely didn't spend one of your first 2 or 3 picks on Bagley. But don't get me wrong, it certainly stings a little bit, just not quite as much as losing someone like Ayton for almost a third of the season. But it looks like Luke Walton has plugged Nemanja Bjelica into that starting power forward spot. He's been a little underwhelming, especially compared to how he started last season, I guess. But he is a beneficiary of this injury nonetheless. I wouldn't recommend him for standard leagues, but there are a couple of other players who see some sort of boost here as well. Bagley was set to see a few more center minutes this year, so that helps some of the other center options on the team, like their starter Dedmon and backup Rashawn Holmes. And in addition to those guys, Harrison Barnes will work more power forward minutes, which is a better position for him, in my opinion. And that means Bogdan Bogdanovic might be seeing a few more minutes as a small forward as well. So lots to take in here on this. Pretty deep Sacramento team. All these names I mentioned, Dedmon, Holmes, Barnes, Bog, and even Trevor Ariza, who I didn't bring up there. They all get a little bump in value. My thought is that because the Kings are pretty deep, the bump in value for these players, it's just that. It's a bump. It's not really a significant increase, in my opinion. If one of these guys was a top 80 option beforehand, I don't think they jump into a top 50 or 60 type of role here. If the player isn't a standard league option, I don't think they necessarily jump onto the standard league radar. You know, they all just get a kind of slight boost, but it's nothing to make any drastic moves about, in my opinion. That's my thoughts on it. What's your stance on this, Kevin? Are you in a similar mindset as me here, or do you expect one of these guys to kind of break out ahead and see a more significant bump in value?
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like I'm copping out because you explained it exactly how I take it as well. And I think there's no obvious winners. You know, Bjelica goes from a guy that you would not even touch to you think about it, but you probably still don't want him on your team.
Yeah.
And the rest, you know, everyone gets a slight uptick. You made a great point about Barnes probably should stay at the, like, power forward is his more natural position. And Bogdanovic gaining some more time in the small forward spot. And Holmes and Dedmon, you know, picking up a little bit more as well as Ariza, but no one really has any major gain from this. It's just kind of all spread out across all of these guys. And, you know, it's more just a big loss to whoever was kind of counting on that double-double from Bagley. You know, that's sort of the main takeaway. Everyone else, it's like, you know, if you have one of those guys on your team, then you're like, I guess you can benefit from it, but I wouldn't really go out of my way to make any moves to pick most of those guys up if you don't already have them rostered.
Yeah. And as a quick extra little tidbit, just something to consider is that Harry Giles, a player Sacramento has stated numerous times that they're high on, he's been out with an injury to start the season, opening up more time for Holmes. I can't help but wonder if Giles will slowly step into that backup role as the season goes on, or if it's Holmes' job to lose. That's just kind of some food for thought as you keep an eye on this situation in Sacramento. But we can move on from one young, promising power forward to another young, promising power forward as we transition to the next segment here, the NBA Week 1 recap, right after this message from Anchor. All right, to start off our recap of topics and storylines from Week 1, man, there's just so much I wanted to talk about, but we like to avoid having a three-hour podcast, so we tried to cut our roster of topics down here. Up first, we have Lauri Markkanen, who seems to be getting more run at center, which would obviously help his value. That tends to be the case for basically all front court players, I think. And Jim Boylan stated he wants to continue giving Markkanen more center minutes, too. So, Kevin, how much does this increase Lowry's value, in your opinion? Will he be climbing up your rankings at all?
I think a little bit. You know, he's kind of came in the league as more of a power forward, and he still does play more of his minutes at power forward than center. But you're right, there has been an increase. Just going on Basketball Reference, he was at 23% at playing center the last 2 years, and then this year he's been 32%. So it's a sizable jump. And obviously that brings him closer to the basket, so he's going to be getting more boards. He's not really a blocks guy, so that's not going to be something to count on, but he will be in that mix a little bit more to get blocks, I guess. So the potential for some increase in just general defensive numbers is probably there. And just watching him play, I mean, that first game, he was just beasting out, and watching him finish around the basket is very impressive. And I think, you know, we kind of look at his outside shooting as one of his major strengths, but he's really good at finishing, you know, inside, and he has a really nice touch inside. So I think if they can kind of keep him or get him more opportunities where he's taking shots, you know, 5-8 feet from the basket, and finishing there, I think that will increase his field goal percentage, increase his scoring, and just overall probably help him out fantasy wise. Now he's had a couple of not as great games since his first one. But, you know, I think the talent is there. And I think, you know, he's definitely going to, if he stays healthy, he's primed for sort of the best season of his career.
Yeah, I like this a lot. You basically touched on what I was going to touch on there. You know, he'll escalate in my rankings a little bit for now. But regardless of what Jim Boylan was saying, Markkanen will basically have to play more center minutes because their only options besides him and Wendell Carter are Luke Kornet and rookie Daniel Gafford, who hasn't really seen much court time in the regular season yet. So I think we'll definitely see a little bump in his center minutes. But we can go ahead and move on here to the next topic. Elsewhere in the East, we shift gears from the front court to the back court in Charlotte. In the spirit of Halloween, you know, Scary Terry has been scary, just not in a good way. Through three games, he's just inside the top 80 at 79 overall. And last night's game against the Lakers really boosted his value because he was outside the top 100 before then. But he's only averaged 26 minutes per game. And, you know, that's not the colossal role that most expected him to get. In addition, he's averaging a modest 12 points per game to go with his 40% field goal. 6.7 assists per game is pretty nice, at least. But, you know, maybe the biggest reason for this smaller role is the solid performance we've seen from Devontae Graham, who was fantastic through two games but really struggled with his shot against the Lakers. Graham was the 25th-ranked player going into the game last night, but he's fallen to 52 overall after that rough shooting performance. He's averaging 18.7 points, 5.7 assists, 3 boards, and 4.3 threes on 43% field goal. And that last game really hurt his averages because he was at 62.5% field goal and 6 threes per game before that. Now, obviously, those are numbers that we're going to take regression regardless because he's never been a good field goal percentage guy like that. But he's also getting a little more playing time than Rozier, averaging 27.6 minutes per game to Rozier's 26.7. So it's pretty similar, but last night helped Rozier in that regard as well. And Rozier was actually benched down the stretch of their first game in favor of Graham. So what do you think, Kev? Do you expect this to be a trend? Do you think Rozier eventually develops a grasp on that larger role? And also, do you see Graham as a must-add in all leagues at this point?
Yeah, coming into this season, I was not a big Rozier fan. I didn't really. He's not the type of player that I like to usually draft. I wasn't really high on him, but that's not a unique take. I think a lot of the fantasy world was pretty much off of him. But he's better than he's shown so far. Obviously, he had a better game recently, but he's gonna get his points. He's gonna get his assists. He'll bludgeon his way there if he has to. That field goal percentage is going to take a hit, and but he's still a guy that is going to be a focal part of the offense. I personally think Graham is a better player overall. I think he's better. I think he's going to be a better fantasy producer, if not this year, down the road. And I see both of them having, fantasy relevant seasons this year. Batum is out right now with I think he broke his finger, and so it's just opening up more minutes in that backcourt for him. And they even have played together some because of that injury, so I could see them sharing the court more, both getting enough minutes to be fantasy relevant. And for me, I guess I would probably still have Rozier higher for now, but I would keep a close eye on it, and I wouldn't be surprised if Graham starts outproducing. I mean, I know he actually is ranked higher than him now, but sort of keeps, at some point there's a switch where Graham is sort of consistently the better player fantasy-wise later in the season, but we'll see. Either way, Rozier is not a guy that I'm buying, but I think he'll be better. And Graham, I think he's going to have a regression a little bit back towards to where he was in the past, but both will still be worth having on your rosters.
Yeah, I'm going to say I'm buying this split of the minutes more so than Rozier dominating the ball like we thought he would. James Borrego has already stated he doesn't care about pedigree or contracts or expected roles. He's going to go with whoever he feels gives them the best chance to win, whoever has the hot hand. And so far, that looks like Graham more so than Rozier, at least through the first two games. But I do expect a little bit of regression, like you were saying. I don't think Graham will be as good as he was through those first two games. That being said, I do think he's worth an add in almost all leagues, and I'll probably drop Rozier in my rankings just a little bit, just from the expectance of this being a timeshare more than, Rozier having that huge role that most people expected him to have.
Sure. So, I could see both being in the top 100 this season. And I think that, that keeps them both relevant in that sense.
Yeah, at this point, that wouldn't really be completely shocking to me either. So we can go ahead and move on to this next guy here. Tristan Thompson has gotten a ton of run to start the season. I personally wasn't expecting to talk about Tristan Thompson in the first episode of the NBA season. But, I was kind of wondering what this Cleveland front court would look like under new coach John Beilein. But Tristan Thompson looked like he has a friggin' stranglehold on the starting role right now. He's averaging 34 minutes per game through two games and is, get this, he's the 27th overall fantasy option right now through those two games. averaging 20.5 points, 12 boards, and two blocks on 70.4% field goal. So, and he's even made a three-pointer, actually. Now, I don't expect this level of productivity to continue. He's never been the biggest. It actually looks like he's the 24th guy, if I'm looking at these rankings correctly, overall. But he's never been the biggest blocks guy. He can muster up a handful of points, maybe even enough for a double-double. But averaging over 20 points per game is shocking for Tristan Thompson. An interesting argument is if his role on offense maybe will be significant under Beilein, unlike in years past. And another noteworthy point is that John Henson will miss the next couple of weeks with an injury. Now, I don't know how much this affects Thompson because I don't see him getting more than the 34 minutes per game he's gotten so far. But, maybe Larry Nance sees more run now. Now, anyway, I understand how small the sample size it is for Thompson after just those first two games, but I'm sort of buying it. Like I said, not to this degree, but I think he'll be a standard league guy. I'll raise him on my rankings to at least, you know, standard size league territory. If he's not owned in your league, I think he should be at this point. Just, you know, it's kind of similar to Kaminsky and Baines. If somebody pops up on your waiver wire that seems like a must add and Thompson is struggling, I wouldn't hesitate to drop him, really. But what about you, Kevin? I'd understand if you're skeptical and want to see more before altering your opinion, but are you buying or selling this hot start for Tristan Thompson?
So how fast can I sell this? Because he's always, you know, those points are going to come way down. There's no way. And actually, when I'm looking at rankings right now, I see him ranked actually number 12 in 9 cats. So maybe I don't know if I have different settings or something, but he's way up there. And, you know, off the strength of, you know, 12 rebounds a game, 20.5 points, shooting 70%. I mean, obviously none of that is going to hold. Maybe the rebounds. That's the only one that he can kind of maintain. You know, I don't. 2 blocks is also kind of high, I think, for him. I expected Love and Nance to kind of get a bulk or more of the front court minutes in general. And he was kind of be the guy that would come in for, you know, 18 to 20 minutes and just kind of clean up some boards and just do a little dirty work and stuff like that. But yeah, he's obviously, you know, he's getting almost 34 minutes a game, which is crazy. I'm surprised, and if I don't have him on any of my teams, he's just one of those guys that's never on my radar. And, I never end up drafting him, even in really deep leagues. But if I had him, I would definitely float him out there and see if anyone is buying and if they think, you know, maybe this could be a top 100 guy, because I don't think he will be. You never know. You mentioned the new coach, maybe, you know, they really focus on his defensive presence, and want to bring that to the table. Overall, I'm selling. I don't think, you know, obviously I know you don't think that he's going to maintain these numbers, but I don't necessarily see him as being, you know, much more than sort of a low end standard league guy. So he's just not a guy that really intrigues me that much. So if you could trade him for a potential top 100 player, I personally am all about doing that.
Yeah, you know, he's never really been focal point of an offense he's never had a big offensive role before. And like you said, I do expect his points to come down. He's not going to average 20 points per game. And I expect his field goal percentage to come down a little bit because not many people can average 70% field goal. And he's at 100% free throw right now. So that'll come down.
Yeah, that's coming down.
And in addition to that, you know, he's averaging 2 blocks per game right now, which he's never been the biggest blocks guy, so that'll come down as well. But he's at I'm showing 24th overall right now. You know, as a second round value, even if he drops significantly from that, I mean, he could still be a standard league guy. Like you said, I don't expect him to be a top 100 guy to end the season. But standard, you know, maybe at the end of standard leagues, you know, top 125-ish, something like that, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, if he's getting this kind of role, you know, these minutes at 34 minutes per game.
No, you're right. You're
most
right.
People can do something with that at least. So
I agree. I mean, I was kind of harsh, but I agree. Like, and I said, like, you know, low end standard league, sure. 125, maybe a little bit higher than I would go, but that's reasonable. And I wouldn't be shocked, especially if they keep him at over 30 minutes a game, which I'm curious to see how that holds up. I don't know if he's going to maintain that, but if he does, then he's definitely going to surpass my expectations.
Yeah. And that's my contingency as well. If he continues getting over 30 minutes per game, I mean, 34 is a lot for a guy like this, especially, you know, he only played 43 games last season, I believe. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But we can move on to the next one if you're ready.
Sure.
Let's see. All right. Next up, we have another pretty confusing situation here, kind of hard to grasp. In Brooklyn's opening game of the season, things were looking up for Jared Allen. He started and played significantly more minutes than DeAndre Jordan in that overtime loss. Allen got 36 minutes to Jordan's 16 there, but it seems like Kenny Atkinson said, hey, we need to make this situation a little murkier for the fantasy players out there. So in the next game, Allen still started, but their minutes were a lot closer. And if that wasn't bad enough, Atkinson seemed to say, you know what, our center situation still isn't confusing enough. Let's start DeAndre this time. And so it was that DeAndre Jordan started in game three, and their minutes were pretty close to even again. Kevin, do you have any idea about what you think about this situation at all? Do you expect to see any consistency eventually, or will this just be a tough-to-peg front court rotation most of the year?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, and I think it's going to be closer to what we've seen the last couple games as opposed to the first game. I was actually kind of surprised in the first game that Allen got as much run as he did. And
yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we all as fantasy enthusiasts want to see. But when they signed Jordan, I was like, I had a feeling that this was going to be closer to a, you know, like a 60-40 type split. And I think that's what it's going to be. Obviously, it's going to go up and down. And I think they're going to kind of play matchups a little bit and kind of go with who's got a little bit more of the hot hand. Because Allen does sometimes disappear a little bit and hasn't been the most consistent player. And so I could see them kind of leaning on a vet a little bit more. You know, I think outside of Kyrie and LeVert, it's kind of a little fluid with the rest of the lineup there as far as who's going to get the minutes. And I do think they may start going a little more hot hand, as the season goes on. But it's not going to be a fun situation in the center position for Brooklyn as far as pegging who's going to be the guy to really focus on. And if you drafted Allen thinking that he was going to average 32 minutes a game or something like that, I don't think that's happening. And, he has the upside. He has the potential. And I don't think it's happening this season with DeAndre there.
Yeah, I basically agree 100%. It'll be somewhere around that 60-40 split that you said. And, I feel like we should have seen this coming, right? You know, this was destined to be a committee pairing. Jared Allen should be at least slightly favored because he's young and he's their future there. Plus, I don't think there's any drop-off from Allen to DJ. In fact, I think Allen might be the better option at this point. But, you know, we got to keep the stars happy in Brooklyn. So
right.
DJ's going to get his minutes. So I still don't know if I'd want to own Jordan in standard size leagues. You know, he might just squeeze into there. Allen is worth owning, but it'll be a bumpy ride. But yeah, we don't have to spend too much more time here. I think we both agreed there. Let's move on to another Eastern Conference team much further south. Miami Heat starting point guard Kendrick Nunn looked great in summer league and preseason, and he's carried that into the regular season so far. Nunn has started all three games to start the season and is averaging some pretty nice numbers with 22 points, 3.3 assists, 2.7 threes, and two steals on 51.9% shooting and 100% from the line. And that was in just under 32 minutes per game. But I think it's very important to take into consideration that the Heat have been missing Jimmy Butler this whole time. He'll be sending either Nunn or Hero to the bench upon his return. Either way, Miami has got to be happy with a steal in Kendrick Nunn. But as for now, Nunn is the 30th ranked fantasy player, I believe. It's tough to put my finger on this one fully. I obviously see Nunn's talent, and I actually have had him stashed in a couple of leagues since summer league. I don't know if I'm comfortable saying he's a lock for standard league value yet. I want to see it after Butler returns. But Kevin, do you expect Nunn to remain a surefire standard league guy, or is he still just more of a dynasty league, deep league play for you until he proves himself once Butler returns?
It's funny. You know, I knew nothing about this guy before summer league. And, you know, I don't follow college like you do. And he kind of just came out of nowhere for me. And even after summer league, I was just like, you know, sometimes guys will have big performances in summer league and then you don't hear about them. And I kind of thought that he was going to be one of those guys. And, you know, all the focus was on Hero. And this guy looks legit. Like, you know, just from watching what I've seen from him in game so far, like, he looks like he's the real deal. And obviously, you can't expect the numbers that he's having. You know, we keep talking about regression back to the norm, and there's no way he would maintain this even if Jimmy Butler wasn't coming back. But, you know, with Jimmy coming back, there's going to be a gigantic usage reduction with him on the court. And I do think he's probably going to stick to, if I had to bet, I would say he sticks in the starting lineup. I think Spoelstra, from what I have read, likes him there and has said that when Jimmy comes back, I hopefully I'm getting the, you know, this right, but I think he said that Hero is the one that was replacing Butler while he was out. And so once Butler comes back, Hero will move back to the bench, which would leave none still in the starting lineup. So we'll see what happens. I'm very curious to watch it. You know, this is definitely one of the situations that I'm very curious to keep an eye on. But I don't know. I'm buying big time on him. You know, obviously it's a super small sample size, but just from what I've seen, he looks like he's got the stuff. And I would buy right now in a standard league. You know, if he ends up, you know, fizzling, whatever, hits a rookie wall, Jimmy Butler punches him in the face or something like that, you know, then you can always drop him, you know. But I think the potential is there. The upside's there. He could be one of those rookies that just surpasses everyone's expectations and in his first year is standard league relevant and, you know, brings sort of that fun that, you know, having a rookie that's, you know, doing well does to your team. So I would pick him up, and I've picked him up in, I think, one of my leagues. He was available, but you know, he's a guy to watch. And like I said, I'm buying, and you know, we'll see what happens when Jimmy comes back, which I think is Tuesday, tomorrow. But I like what I've seen.
Yeah, you know, in college, Nunn was never the biggest assist guy. They really jumped up in his senior year when his usage spiked tremendously. But, you know, even that was only 3.8 assists per game, and that was in, it's like 38 minutes per game. So, you know, he's never been that. But, you know, Miami's development system lately, I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes more of a playmaker. But, you know, just a few years ago, Miami had the unexpected breakout league-winning player in Hassan Whiteside, and they might have another this year in Kendrick Nunn. You know, the talent has certainly been there thus far. We'll see how he looks after Butler returns and steals usage from everyone. But moving on here, we're actually heading back up to New York again. Dennis Smith Jr., man, geez, this has really been an unexpected situation, to be honest, for me. I know New York is deep with role player level talent, but dang, I mean, Dennis Smith, he's averaging 8 minutes per game at the moment, and he's now dealing with a death in the family and is expected to miss time. I know DSJ was a popular late-round flyer for a lot of people. So, Kevin, I have to imagine he's a drop, right, at least for redraft leagues. And what do you do if you own him in a dynasty league but you're trying to be competitive?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much out on DSJ at this point. Yeah. You know, it's tough if you have him in dynasty because you probably spent some sort of value for him and you're not going to get much back right now. And you might end up having to kind of just sit and cross your fingers. But man, being on the Knicks is not the best place, I think, for him to develop. And, you know, it's just a mess over there. And I don't think that's going to help him in his career. I'm worried. I could see him being out of the league in a few years. And as far as fantasy, I'm out completely. Redraft, I'm cutting him, not even thinking twice about it. And, you know, hopefully he gets everything together. You know, I think I bought into the hype as well his rookie year. You know, he has that crazy athleticism right, and that explosion that's just amazing to see when, you know, he's in transition or whatever. And But what I've been hearing after the fact is that there's definitely some basketball IQ issues that have become apparent, that he just, it's hard for him to put it all together and make it work and run offenses and read defenses. And it's just, it might just be something where it just, it doesn't really work out. And, you know, he could be playing in China in a few years or something. So we'll have to see. But either way, redraft, cut him. Pick anybody, you know, pick up Tristan Thompson if you want. But at this point, and in Dynasty, you know, maybe you find that Knicks fan, or you see what you can get. Maybe you get a bunch of second round picks for him, or I don't know. But you probably end up just having to hold, and you know, especially in those deep Dynasty 30 team leagues, probably just have to hold him and hope for the best.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention the crazy athleticism versus a lack of court IQ, because I was actually, I wrote down, I have notes in my phone where I keep track of things I want to either bring up on the podcast or maybe write an article about if it's significant and deep enough. And that was one of them. You know, prospects coming out of college, would you prefer the uber athlete or the super IQ guy? And we're seeing a lot lately the extreme athlete with low basketball IQ. We're seeing them struggle a lot lately with Dennis Smith Jr., with Josh Jackson. We saw it with Marquise Chris, who's actually he might be carving out a decent role on the Warriors this year. But we've been seeing that a lot. You know, Stanley Johnson. There's several names, and then you have the opposite end of the spectrum, guys like Jason Tatum and Fred VanVleet, who maybe they weren't the most appealing player coming out of college for these NBA teams because of their lack of athleticism. I mean, Jason Tatum isn't really a non-athlete, I think, but he's not the most athletic guy. And these are the guys that are finding success right now. You know, it's part of the reason I have hope for Grant Williams right now and don't really have much hope for a guy like Nasir Little. You know, it's kind of that storyline going on here. But
sure. Yeah, it makes me think of Perry Jones. You know, guys like that, you know, they just leap off. You see highlight videos and you see them dunking in transition, or you see them driving past, you know, second rate college defenders and just, you know, dunking on people. And it, you know, it's exciting. It's fun to see. And then you see them in summer league or in the G League, and they can't rotate on defense, and you know, they look completely lost, and they, you know, if they're a point guard, they're just, you know, they can't see the floor like you think they're gonna. And I think, you know, DSJ might be one of those guys, and it's unfortunate because, you know, I think a lot of for fantasy, a lot of people kind of had high hopes, and you know, he seems like a good dude otherwise, and it's just, you know, you want to see these guys succeed, but it's just like, if you don't have that sort of the IQ for basketball, and you're just kind of a freak athlete, it's you're right. You know, I think in today's basketball, you have to be able to do a lot of other things, and you can't just kind of glide by on just pure athleticism, and it's unfortunate for some of these guys.
Yeah, and Dennis Smith Jr., he's a 100% drop for me in standard leagues. I agree with you there. There's too much surprising talent available on waiver wires right now as roles begin to shake out and solidify. But as for dynasty leagues, if you're trying to compete, I think you have to do something here. But what you do is dependent on your league size, in my opinion. If your dynasty league is just a shallower 10 to 12 team league, I think you can cut them. They are dependent on what's available. In deeper dynasty leagues, you know, your 12, your 30 team leagues, maybe even 16 teamers, it's a really tough spot. I try to see what I could get on the trade market. I know it won't really be great right now. I don't imagine you'd get much for him at this point. You know, in the words of a popular fantasy football analyst, recency bias is a hell of a drug. if you can get a surefire top 150-ish player for DSJ, you know, an older guy.
Yeah, I think that's the key. Look for the old guy that, right. You know, look for the Jay Crowder or something like that.
Right.
That, you know, people are just bored of having on their team, and they feel like they want to just roll the dice on some younger guy, and that might be the way to go.
Sure, even a guy like DJ Augustine, if would you make that trade if you're trying to compete in dynasty leagues?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. What about, I had this one written down, but if you're doing it for Augustine, well, I don't know. Would you trade your Dennis Smith Jr. for Isaiah Thomas? You know, so far, IT looked pretty good in that first game in about 20 minutes with 16, 3, and 5 with a handful of threes as well. So,
yep. If it's redraft, even if it's dynasty,
right.
You know, I think I would do it. Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if anybody's trading for him in redraft at this point, but yeah, in dynasty, I agree with you there. Moving on here, there's something weird brewing in San Antonio. Trey Lyles is actually starting at center for them. I wouldn't have thought he's a real option in the paint on the defensive end, but we know Popovich can manage to make some bad stuff look good. And I guess the thing that surprised me the most here is that Lyles is actually averaging more minutes than Jakob Poeltl so far. I don't know if it's because of the fit next to Aldridge, you know, complementing each other a little better. Poeltl isn't looking like the sleeper pick I thought he might have been. So, Kevin, do you see Trey Lyles as a viable fantasy option? Maybe not in shallow leagues, but let's say like 14, 16 team leagues. You know, is he an add to you if he keeps starting and getting this kind of role?
I don't think so. He's not really a guy that produces enough in fantasy for me. You know, it's not very diverse. At best, you know, he'll get you some points, maybe a three, a couple boards, but he's just nothing he does really stands out. And I would still, even if he's, if they're splitting minutes and he's starting, I would still take Poeltl over him just for the blocks upside that Poeltl gives you. And I agree, you're right. It's weird that they would have him start, especially for defensive purposes. Right. You know, you would rather have Poeltl in there, but hey, I'm not one to question Pop. So, you know, I think maybe he thinks DeJounte Murray and Derek White are just locking everybody down so they don't have to worry about protecting the paint that much. But yeah, it's kind of a weird situation. And I think if all it really may do is just kind of eat a little value from Poeltl but I wouldn't recommend picking up Lyles unless you're like in a, you know, at least a 20 team league, if not a 30 team league.
Yeah. I don't know about picking up Lyles either. He's still just right around that 200 ranking mark. So it would have to be one of those deeper leagues. I'd just add him to the watch list and go from there. And I am unfortunately dropping Poeltl in my rankings a little bit. I'll give him one more game just to be patient. You know, the Spurs get a matchup against Portland, I believe, tonight. So we'll see.
You know, he still did have, in 15 minutes, the last game, he had 6 boards, 4 assists, and 3 blocks. So, I mean, you can't really complain too much about that. And I agree, the lack of minutes is not ideal, but I think he will still produce enough to hold value. And you know, the Lyles situation isn't, you know, it's not ideal, like I said, but it's not going to take enough away where I think that, you know, like Poeltl is not standard league relevant anymore or something.
Yeah, and I agree with you that even in less minutes per game, I'd rather own Poeltl. He's one of those guys that he can get it done for you in limited playing time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just frustrating, man. You know, Poeltl is the only like real center on their roster, so I guess Pop felt like he had to do something. And I say that, you know, Aldridge would be a great center for them, but he doesn't like to play the center position for whatever reason. I guess he doesn't like to bump and grind down low. So
yeah, some guys don't like to get beat up. So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's fair.
All right, we can go ahead and move on to the next segment here. Got one more segment coming up, and it's going to be our matchups and storylines of the upcoming week. You know, things that we're just kind of watching for, keeping our eye on for one reason or another. All right, as we move into our matchups of the week, the first one that I think is worth keeping an eye on here for me is Tuesday's Heat versus Hawks game. And this is strictly because of the potential return of Jimmy Butler. I don't really have a ton here. That's the main thing. That's what this comes down to for me, because as we mentioned earlier, Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero have been good for them, so I'll be watching to see just how much of a step back Nunn takes upon Butler's return, you know, just how much this affects him and his usage. But Kevin, anything on that one? And if not, what's your first matchup of the week here you're watching?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely interested in seeing what Jimmy's impact is returning, because they've been an interesting team to watch so far. Jumping to Wednesday, the matchup I'm kind of interested in seeing is Minnesota-Philly. Just assuming Embiid is playing, you know, I like the Embiid-Karl Anthony Towns matchup and seeing those two go to battle. You know, Philly's looked intense on defense so far this season. So you kind of have that you know, a million arms going everywhere versus Kat, who's kind of been taking on that Jokic role on offense, and just everything seems to be running through him. And he's just been on a tear and has been the number one fantasy player so far in the season. Just putting up stats in every single category. So we'll see if Philly can slow them down. We'll see if the battle between him and Embiid, I guess arguably the two best centers, depending on where you put Davis, if you have him as a center or if you count Jokic in there. But either way, seeing those two guys go head to head is something that I think is definitely worth checking out if you're just you're a casual basketball fan, because that's going to be some high quality basketball, I think.
Yeah, Anthony Davis is one of those guys like Aldridge who doesn't want to play the center position. So I'd have Kat and Embiid right there at the top of the center ranking. So and I am interested to watch that game you mentioned as well, but just because, like you mentioned, Kat has just been on a tear, man. He has been, man, congratulations if you picked Kat, you know, with one of your top five picks in this draft, because he's going to be worth every cent of it.
Oh, sure.
And I'm also interested in the game because I want to see if Trevion Graham continues to start at that small forward spot, you know, how he does for them going forward. I thought it was an interesting choice to incorporate him in the starting lineup there. I think a lot of us thought it might have been either Jared Culver or Josh Okogie there. I think a lot of people were a little surprised that Graham got the start. But let's see. My other matchup of the week is Thursday's late game on TNT. The Pelicans versus the Nuggets. One reason I have them here is to keep an eye on the Millsap-Jeremy Grant situation. In game one, Millsap seemed to have the much bigger role locked down. But in their last game against Phoenix, Grant got 31 minutes to Millsap's 21. I just hope this doesn't end up being an unpredictable situation like we have in Brooklyn's front court. But I'll be watching to see. I think a lot of us expected, you know, maybe Millsap starts, but Grant gets more run. I think he fits there. His athleticism and his bounciness kind of fits there a little bit. But maybe more so than the Nuggets rotation situation in this matchup I'll be watching is I want to see some of these young Pelicans players closely. I'll probably be keeping an eye on all Pelicans games to see if Josh Hart and Brandon Ingram can keep this pace up. While New Orleans has lost in close games in all three of their first contests, kind of broke my heart. Josh Hart and Brandon Ingram have been revelations, man. Josh Hart is the 35th overall ranked player right now in 9 Cat Leagues, averaging 18 points, 7.3 boards, 1.3 steals, 0.7 blocks, and 3 threes with a 91.7% free throw shot.
Yeah, he's a player I thought was kind of wasted in L.A. When they had him over there. And when they were doing all the trade scenarios, I always thought they should have held on to him.
Right.
Instead of I know Kuzma has the name, but I think it would have made a lot more sense to have a guy like Hart playing on LeBron's team than Kuzma. But yeah, he's been great this season. It's fun to see. The Pelicans really kind of unleash him. And I agree. I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on.
Agree 100% that Josh Hart could have worked wonders for this Lakers team, even behind KCP and Danny Green. Like he could have been nice there. And people forget that he was dealing with some injuries throughout a big portion of last season. I think these are the stats he can be strong in. He'll get some points, threes, and hopefully free throw percentage. Hopefully that stays legit. But he also has the ability to get those out-of-position rebounds and blocks. He can potentially be very good if the Pelicans can keep their pace up. you know, they seem to slow down at the end of games, which is distorting their overall pace numbers. And then Brandon Ingram, man, he's been outstanding compared to my expectations going into the season. The 22-year-old is the 10th overall ranked fantasy player so far. And while I don't expect that to continue, I think Ingram can continue to find some great success in this pace and system while he's sort of the focal point of the offense. Now, when Zion returns, B.I. probably won't be the focal point of the offense anymore. But so far, he's getting 35 minutes per game and averaging 27 points, 9.3 boards, 4.3 assists, 3.3 threes, and 1.7 blocks on 52.5% from the field and 80% from the charity stripe. Those numbers are otherworldly compared to expectations, man.
Yeah, that's crazy. I think part of it, too, is obviously Drew's been dealing with some injury stuff, and it seems like he's been the guy that kind of has picked up a lot of that slack. And, so I think I agree. He's been outstanding, and it'll be interesting to see once, you know, that New Orleans is so deep and so just stacked with young, fun talent. And so it'll be cool to see when everyone's healthy, kind of how it all pans out. But it's, you know, for now, watching a lot of these ex-Lakers kind of really find a new life here in New Orleans is definitely been a great story.
Yeah, and how you mentioned Josh Hart was a bit marginalized in L.A., I was concerned that would be the case here in New Orleans as well, especially after the draft and after summer league when certain players started to pop. You know, I thought there would be several guards and wing players ahead of him in the rotation. You know, Drew, Redick, Nickeil Alexander-Walker showed out a lot. Brandon Ingram, and then Lonzo Ball, obviously. And I think there's one guy I'm forgetting, too. I thought Josh might be ahead of Frank Jackson, but his position as a wing, I don't know. I just kind of thought his role would be pretty small, and he'd be behind all of these guys. But, you know, Gentry's shown that they really want to get Josh Hart involved here, and hopefully Redick can teach him a thing or two. I think J.J. Redick's one of the best movers on the court in the league right now. But getting back to Brandon Ingram here, I think this was the idea of a developed Brandon Ingram when he was drafted second overall. I do expect most of those numbers to fall back just a little bit. Like, he's not going to average 27 points and almost 10 boards once Zion returns and forces Ingram back to small forward a little bit more. But either way, these former Lakers, like you said, they've been great for the Pels, and I'll obviously be watching to see if they can, A, keep it up, and B, start translating those numbers to some wins, hopefully.
Yeah, it'll happen. Yeah, you said, they've all been kind of close losses, and I think that as they kind of gel a little bit more, they'll be able to close games out better.
Yeah, I just hope they don't become the Chargers of the NBA. But, Kevin, you got a... one more to throw?
I got one more. The game, and I think this is a national televised game, on Friday, Houston and Brooklyn. Here you have two teams that are in the top five in pace. So just that alone makes it something that I want to see. I mentioned this in one of our league's group chats, and I'm just like, every time I watch Kyrie this season, he's just the most fun player for me to watch.
He's mesmerizing.
He's amazing with his handles, and he just does all sorts of crazy stuff. Like that shot to try to win the game. I don't even remember who they were playing against, but he did an NBA street. If you remember that video game, it was like he got on the ground and rolled over while he was dribbling the ball and then took the shot. And it was a good shot. Like it was a clean shot, too. He just missed it. But that would have been a fun game winner if he had hit it. But he's so fun to watch. So it's just like anytime he's on the court, and I love Caris LeVert as well. I find him to be a lot of fun. And so you have those two, and you have going up against Harden and Westbrook. You're going to be in for a track meet, and I definitely just think that it's going to be, high paced, fun game, a lot of back and forth, a lot of trash talk, and a lot of just crazy moves. And, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So I think you know, as far as like a popcorn game, that for me, that's definitely one that I'm going to want to sit and just kind of enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. Kyrie, the third overall player so far in non-cat. And one thing that kind of I thought was worth mentioning is that Kenny Atkinson, he's been known up to this point to be a coach who doesn't like to play his players more than 30 minutes per game.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's never had a player that averaged 31 minutes per game or more. Even D'Angelo Russell, with his high usage, only averaged 30.4 minutes per game or something like that. But he's doing it now. Kyrie is averaging 34.6 minutes so far. LeVert's averaging 33 or something like that.
Right.
He even has there's a couple of other ones too. I can't think of off the top of my head, but yeah, he's been playing his guys, man, and that's a good thing to see for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, definitely. They're just such a fun team right now, and it's going to be interesting to see when KD comes back next year how that all fits together. Because I know LeVert signed a contract or an extension, and you know, there's a lot of talent. And like I said, just for me, Kyrie, you know, I've always been a Kyrie fan, but I feel like he's kind of turned it up, at least in the first couple games this season, and has just been kind of just ridiculous and fun to watch. So, you know, I think it's going to be a good game on Friday.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. One more I'll throw out real quick for Saturday is the Hornets versus the Warriors. I want to see if the Warriors' depth can be good enough to to handle the lowly Hornets, who actually have more wins than the Warriors. Hornets are 1-2, Warriors 0-2. So, boy, the Warriors just have the worst depth in the league, man, and it might not even be close. Like, when you're playing guys like Omari Spellman, Jordan Poole,
The Wizards may have something to say about that.
Yeah, that might be close. That might be the only other one that compares it.
Right, right.
All right. Well, I think we can go ahead and put a bow on this episode. You guys remember to check out our website, thefantasyunicorns.com, for all kinds of stuff, like weekly streaming help articles, weekly waivers, DFS, redraft, dynasty rankings, and other general helpful articles, all the stuff we mentioned at the top of the episode. I've been Jay. Find me on Twitter, at FantasyNBALayup. Kevin, I thank you for joining me in Tony's absence. It's been fun. You want to let the people know where they can find you, and you have any other parting words or anything like that?
No, this was great. I had a lot of fun as well. So anytime Tony can't make it, just let me know. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Kevin So. I've dialed back the politics the last few days. So if I've scared you away, know that I'm trying to chill out a little bit, keep it a little more basketball focused. But either way, follow me or tweet at me, or ask me questions, whatever. And yeah, this was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, thanks again, Kevin. And thank you, Fantasy Fiends, for tuning in. We always appreciate you joining us, and we wish everyone a great week 2 of NBA games and fantasy matchups. Remember, the college season is starting as well, and we'll catch you later.
See you.